Good evening and welcome to Contagious Collapsible Convictions. My name is Jerry Fielka, part two bobbing for apples. Why do we call it that, Mark?
Well, I think the best reason to say why we're bobbing for apples is to first look at, we know the obviously the bob and bobbing reference, but I think the apple is, I think the thing that needs to explain in the sense that apple is a representative of knowledge as a the kind of forbidden fruit of the Garden of Eden, and we are kind of sticking our heads down into the watery mire of the Bob communications to try to grab with our teeth and pull up some fruit from the icy cold waters.
I like that. That sounds very good.
Essentially, we are bobbing for apples. I've always experienced that the radio play of Bob is much like that as well, because you never quite know what piece of information is going to come floating up through at any moment.
I was going to say an apple a day keeps the bobby away.
Or keeps the bobby awake.
Then again, wake. Okay, so do you want to start on page 6?
Yeah.
Where we left off.
We left off and we started talking about the monstrous appendages. Giving you some interval here. We started talking about the sense of touch as related to the inner senses and stuff related to that, and we will carry on going down to the bottom of the page where we started to get to vanishing point. And Bob starts to then talk about, well, after he talks about the drug addicts, the artist as the drug addict.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom hasn't. In other words, suicide is the last stance of the 19th century ego, which hasn't gone through the vanishing point. And then he proceeds to say, "Go through the vanishing point is to understand the new environments, to feel them as part of your body." Now that's a pretty good definition, but I still don't really get anything out of it except to maybe say that where Bob is trying to take us is to the vanishing point. Can you expand on that? Is that the goal? Is that the goal to go through the vanishing point? Is that when we go back to sleep, or is that when we wake up, or is that, you know?
When he says, go through the vanishing point, is to understand the new environments, to feel them as part of your body.
So in other words, to go through the vanishing point is to become a media ecologist on some level, but it seems like there are people like Frank Zappa who are already somewhat of media ecologists, you know? They have their own kind of media ecology, and you can't really. Did Frank go through the vanishing point? I think Bob would say no, you know. Because he's saying to understand the new environments, to feel them as part of your body. You know, Frank maybe got part of the way through the vanishing point. That's what I'm saying. It's not really clear. I mean, he starts talking about the vanishing point, but he doesn't really express it here as to whether that's the goal of discussing the discarnate state. And that obviously it's to form some kind of working model of what's going on. But when he seems to push this idea to go through the vanishing point, he goes down later to say, lit to the bottom of page 7, all that movement, no matter how fast the blurred image represents speed, is all the stuff before the vanishing point. And he goes on to talk about basically what I would say all the experiences he goes on later, just to talk about the drug use is to make people think they're speeding up to go into the vanishing point. And then he goes on to finish the whole thing by saying that junk is like a nostalgic thing. It gives you a sense of getting a boost. If you're still trying to pump up your body like a hydraulic jack, that's still looking at the body as something that needs to be pumped up. But you can see why people would try to experience that as they go through the obliterated moment of the vanishing point, leading up to the point of going through the vanishing point. Do you see that?
Yeah.
So he's saying like that drugs give you the illusion of going up to the vanishing point and getting obliterated in it. But
it's not actually.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, he's not really laying out vanishing point here in a way where I think people are going to perceive that this is either the goal of media ecology to go through the vanishing point, or that one needs to go through the vanishing point to become a media ecologist. Do you see what I'm saying? He's definitely talking a lot here about a certain concept that he's wanting to express. He's using very different models to try to. When he talks about it being junk, being a simulation of the desire to go through the process, he talks about Frank's work as related to that process, you know, or how he falls short in specific. But I don't think that he really, you know, comes to say truly what the vanishing point is, why or why we're trying to go through it, or what it is the goal or state it represents. I mean,
Well, I think he says to go through the vanishing point is to understand the new environment.
Right. So that would say anybody who is media conscious what's the working vernacular term for that?
Right. How is it defined?
Is this another case where we need a word, or we need a term to be molded, or
be another term for it?
Right. Exactly.
I'd say slack is one.
Well. But see, I don't agree. I think there are people who have slack who do not gone through the vanishing point. That's what they're saying. What is this? I mean, this seems like kind of like the if we had nirvana as the goal of Buddhism, you know, or something like that, or rapture as the goal of, or going to heaven as the goal of Christianity. Obviously this kind of consciousness that you get where you discover your, maybe call it solar consciousness, your larger, far-reaching consciousness, you know, is to go through this vanishing point, obviously. I mean, I'm getting that kind of feeling from it, that he's saying this is kind of the state that you get into once you become, you know, what we might say, enlightened.
I think he talks about it as though it's just one of the forms of environment we can take on and experience, and that it's not just the peak.
Well, see, my understanding of vanishing point as terms of relates to science,
yeah,
is there's a point with a black hole where the force of gravity in a black hole is so great that it pulls light in, and light that goes by is getting pulled in and doesn't escape, so we don't see it. That's why it's a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a point like where when if you get too close to a black hole, your time frame, like T0, goes back, and from then on, it's just you're going into the black hole. There's no escape. Like, you can't get out of it. It's like it's sucking you in, and it's the point of no return. And that's what the vanishing point is, essentially. You know, when a photon's going and it hits a black hole, the point where it crosses that timeline into the path of no return, only to go in there, that's where the vanishing point happens, because you can't see it anymore. Like, as this thing moves closer to the black hole, more of its light gets drawn into the black hole, and there comes a point where the last little bit that's escaping out to go towards you gets sucked down.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when you get to me, I mean, like, in terms of what I would perceive from my own other work, there's a certain point where one realizes that one's body is only the vehicle, and that there's this larger, more farther-reaching driver.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
consciousness.
Yeah, but like a central human personality.
Collective consciousness.
It's almost as though like the players in the play were all the director. The director is or as if you put your hand, took your hand and dressed up each of your fingers as a different player, and ultimately they were all the same
person.
So I would say that the vanishing point is the point where one realizes that, like, the words that we're talking now that are not only going down on the tape, like as you said earlier, are going out across the universe. They're going to all living people who are tuned in on what level could receive them right now. Anybody who would be just meditating and tuning into whatever frequency we're transmitting out across, not only here on this planet, but anywhere in the universe, could pick up on it.
Mm-hmm.
So the radio is just a image that we've externalized for an inner process, like so that the unenlightened can begin to grasp this idea that we're in communication with all points. And to make that more sophisticated, we would develop the telephone. And now in a few more years, we're going to make it more sophisticated, where we're going to have, like, talkie phones where you can see the person while you're talking. And I'm sure then beyond that, then they'll create a laser phone where you'll go and sit in a machine and you'll be able to, like, experience interacting with people, like in a synthetic holographic laboratory, to get great minds to work together in the quote-unquote same electric room. There's all kinds of, you know, there's
it's going to happen.
You know, I mean, yeah, I mean, I could see all that as a logical extension.
Yeah.
You know, and not necessarily as bad or fearful technology either.
Oh.
But, you know, for me, the vanishing point, as this seems like what a lot of people, other cultures would call the culmination of the great work or whatever. I mean, that's what seemed to be implying to me, this kind of like enlightened state where one from that point one is able to comprehend all the stuff that's in this environment, like you said, to understand the new environments and to feel it as part of your body, to become essentially the master of the channel changer and the VCR and that, not to just shun them, not to just block them out, you know, not to just say no electric media, because you can't get away from that. The sun shining down on us is sunshine, is electric media. I mean, you know, so go back to the.
Well, let me ask you a question about a vanishing point for a second.
Sure.
Do you think that is comparable with saying or asking someone to go beyond?
To go beyond? Give me a context.
Well, it's like we know what love is and loving each other, but what is beyond love?
Well, okay.
For an example,
yeah. I can give you a real nice answer to that, but I don't think that really touches on what you wanted to say by saying beyond. I would just say, in the specific you gave, that there are two kinds of love that the Greeks called eros, the lower love, the procreative love, the sexual polarity attraction,
right.
And then there's the other, the higher love, agape. Which is like the brotherly love, or the love that's shared between respect and responsibility between the hierarchies of all the levels of life. Like the predator and the prey, even though he's about to eat them, there's a certain respect that goes between them, seeing the perpetuation of life. And it's the same type of thing that goes between you and your brother when you look at them on the street, or you and your sister dwellers on the planet, and you just go, well, that's cool. I'm glad that what they're doing, they're digging, or they're, you know. That you could obviously see that kind of goodwill, brotherly love thing is a much higher. Well, then that's, for me, that's what love is. That's a beyond. I mean, because most people wouldn't call that love. Most people think of love as being, you know, lingerie and chocolate on Valentine's Day. Yeah. and we've had that discussion. How I don't think that Valentine's Day is a day of the lower love. It's a day of the higher love, and it's been thrown down in the gutter so that someone could make some cash.
Yeah.
Use it as another day to sell shit.
That's true.
Anyhow, but I mean, does that mean my go
but
beyond?
No, that was fine. I didn't have anything in specific. I'm just asking.
But for me, I think he's representing the vanishing point as that point where one has like gathered enough information and pattern recognition systems with which to form the new models and the understanding, like in a sense to become initiated. Like imagine that you had to learn all these things, like to become a doctor. To become initiated as a doctor, you have to learn all these things and take all these tests and study all these things. And when it's all done, at a certain point, after it's all done, they're willing to sit you down and knight you. Ding, ding, MD. Okay. And that's kind of like what I think the vanishing point is. You study all these media environments and you get to a certain point where it all clicks in and makes sense and ding, ding. You're maybe a media ecologist, or maybe you're a tetra-advancer, or maybe you're a... I don't know. I don't know. You know, I personally am not maybe at that point where I've gone through the vanishing point. I'm trying to get there, you know. Who's to say? That to me is what I...
I think you'll duly experience more.
Well, see, now I think that's momentary. See, I think that's like if you could talk about like sticking your head into a wall of fog and being able to see in it without being, like, in it, immersed in it or whatever. And I think when you talk about what the vanishing point is, when you're ready to just jump into the abyss of it and just...
And there's no coming back.
It's just
a one-time, one-shot
Yeah, deal. It's a veil. Like, you cross through a couple of veils to get to that point, and then you just, like...
And that's it?
Right, and that's represented in another model that I, you know, talk about at some other time.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, he then goes on here in this whole part to talk about Maslow's law, which I think is an important point. You know, the more satisfied you get, the more unsatisfied you get. I think that should be probably the sign as you come to Los Angeles. That's underneath. Welcome to Los Angeles. The more satisfied you get here, the more unsatisfied you'll be at some other time. And then he goes down to start talking about the entertainment world, he says, and as you move through them, and the them being the central nervous system and software activities, and realize the ephemerality of whatever phase of media you're engaging in, you get more empty or more vaporous as you slowly, if you're lucky enough to get there, realize that you do not exist as an anthropomorphic entity, and that you've just been wearing all these different media as clothing as numbing apparatus because you don't want to perceive the all-at-oneness of the electric effect. Now, that right there is pretty much what I'm talking about. Like, all these things that we're doing are making us more and more vaporous until there's a certain point at which you become so vaporous that you've vanished.
That's what he thinks.
I think that's what, I mean, if we were to cut all this other model, you know, all these, like, parts that we were to analyze, we'd say that all he thinks is, you know, oh, this part is talking about a model. Or this part is talking about another model.
Mm-hmm.
To try to, like, get a metaphor out there. But I think the gist of the whole thing is, you know, that's what it comes down to. Is that there's a vantage point where, whereas you move through all these nervous system and software activities that allow you to understand the media environment, you go through the vanishing point, and at that point, you know, that's because you become more empty and more vaporous until you're lucky enough to get there, realize that you do not exist as an anthropomorphic entity. You know, once again, like I said, that you're this larger being that's not, we're like all cars and there's like only one driver, you know. And you've been wearing the media's clothing and numbing apparatus because you want to perceive the electric effect. You know, I think that's, he's saying what it is and how it happens, but he's still not saying how to do it. You know, he's not saying what it's the result of. I mean, he's hinting at it, you know. Like I said, we're able to divine this, but we're putting a lot of time here into trying to sow it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas he says later that one of his goals are to put forward the thing clearly, you know, so that they may understand it. So then I would say, well, does he want me to go through and remove all the extraneous models and just cut it down to clear statements? See, you know, that's kind of...
I think he wants you to be aware of all these environments and not use them as numbing apparatus.
Well, that's so, for sure.
Yeah.
No, that's definite.
Okay, so I'm missing your point. But how about this statement, if we don't divert as... technology is a way of rearranging the world so we can understand it. So we don't have to experience it, excuse me.
Say that again?
Technology is a way of arranging things so we don't have to experience them.
I disagree with that.
Yeah.
So we don't have to move our physical organism out of our chair. You know, I mean, look at even the best technology, like a television, grows to about television with a remote. Even a movie grows into being a VCR that you can watch at home. The radio becomes a radio with a digital dial now that you can change the channel without getting up or just push up tuning. Like I said, it's all geared for you to sit down and remain perfectly still or as still as possible.
Yeah. Well, it's just a matter of interpretation.
I mean,
Otherwise, you might be getting up and getting exercise, moving.
In a sense, I'd almost say I agree with the contrary. I'd say that technology exists for it to give us the chance to experience everything.
I think that's another way of looking at it.
You know?
That's what, you know, it's almost like what virtual reality is then. Why even?
Well, I don't know. I disagree because for me, virtual reality is a place where like all the laws of physics have been pretty much suspended.
Oh.
And, you know, there's no gravity in virtual reality. I mean, there's no, like...
It's fake.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to explain that. That's not, like, the type of thing I'm experiencing through watching my TV. You know, even if it is a phony, contrived image or animation or whatever, it is still subject to me going, well, it's on TV or whatever. When I put on these glasses that are supposed to really plug into my eyes, literally, with what the new technology is... You know, and I'm supposed to be, you know, sucked into a feeling of that I can move freely through it by getting in one of those things with the different wheels so you can go upside down in different orientations. You know, there's no real perception of reality there as when I'm looking at a TV. You know, even if they're both contrived pictures, you know, that like I could be watching, you know, a television or these little monitor in front of my eyes. There's a great difference between the fake reality of technology, quote unquote, the AirSats environment, and the completely, you know, contrived. Not that there's any value to the virtual reality environment. It's contrived.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
if it can help architects, and
well,
surgeons,
if it can help hey,
that's great.
If it can help anybody do anything, I think it would be personally really cool to take an anatomy class and never have to cut open another fucking cadaver.
Right.
I think that would be great. Okay. You know?
Mark, I must recall a story briefly that Bob said when we were planning our trip to Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm.
And he just sort of complained to Connie, can't we just get the video? Do we have to go there? You know, so I think that it typifies what you're trying to say in a way. That,
yeah, but you do have to go there sometimes.
And of course, when he went, when we all went there, he appreciated it and all. But it was just like that sort of philosophy that people have now.
Yeah,
it's like that's what I'm saying. Even if you take, I'm just trying to relate to your using the remote.
Yeah,
it makes you get up and get exercise, and you'll live longer in the long run. So it's hard to say. You know.
Well, I disagree. What if the person? There's plenty of people who exercise at home. They don't have a home gym. I'm saying that
that's all right.
I'm just basically talking about an isolationist living in your home space, staying home as much as possible. I mean, I use the example of in your chair or whatever, not having to move, but that means like not having to go anywhere for anything. Like, you know, if you get everything delivered or you can,
right?
You know, that's what the modern society is going for. So you can stay home, you can work at home, work out at home, you know, do this and that and the other thing. The only thing that, you know, time you're not at home when you're on the way is somebody else's home.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's where they're going. That's where a lot of it's going towards. You know, I think that Bob was saying, you know, did he have to go? But I think that he did, you know, because it comes to something that talking about electric tactility. And I'm going to take us over there.
Okay.
And so it's easy for you to visualize that when you're out in the sun, that you're being hit by little non-visual particles that are conveying heat and stuff onto your body, and that you're being surrounded in them. Or if you were in a mud bath at a health spa and had this big green slop and you got down in it, you could look at yourself and go, yeah, I'm being touched all over by mud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm you don't see it when you're walking around your room, that you're walking around in electromagnetic mud of TV channels and radio signals and microwaves and all this other stuff that are touching you, because you don't have a way to use your to train a model to train your subconscious to.
It's similar to fish in water.
Right.
They're not aware they're in water.
Yeah.
Right.
What okay. Water?
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Actually, I don't know if fish are. I don't know. I don't want to touch that.
Okay.
But let's just say that, you know, mud is not mud. When you're in the mud bath at the health spa, it's probably mud that they brought from the Nile. From Cairo,
uh-huh.
Which if somebody had to go there and bring it back, somebody had to go to a certain space. Each place has a different kind of flavor. Or it's like, so like Bob had to go to Costa Rica to experience the Costa Rica mud, and that mud was not necessarily just the dirt, the actual physical dirt, but it was also the environment, the vibe of the town, the flavor, the people, the atmosphere. All those things are the mud, you know. And I think that when Bob says you go through the vanishing point. And you'll understand the new environments, feel them part of your body. I think that means really to come in touch with the mud and to recognize the mud. You know, to be able to, you know, basically joke about the guy who would take dirt and be able to, like, look at it, taste it, go, what part of town are you from? You know, kind of Sherlock Holmes, oh, he's from the West End, look at the clay in there. Or he's from the sand, look at the sand in it. You know, being able to, making it intelligible, making the seemingly, you know, murky or obscure intelligible. I think that's
pattern recognition.
Well, yeah, I think it is,
yeah.
To a point. But I think then there's a point where, like, the pattern recognition systems have to key into a master pattern, or they have to, and I don't want to say a master pattern like it has to be one thing. It can be 10 different things or 11 different things.
Mm-hmm.
The master pattern does not have to be a one-end-all thing.
Oh, I agree. It's through pattern recognition, we acquire.
Well, I think that's what I'm saying. Like, as far as pattern recognition goes, I don't think that there's a single pattern, you know, except the no pattern. I mean,
that's pattern recognition in itself.
Sure, but I mean, but even pattern recognition is also would also be like metaphor inclusiveness. Like, there are certain like metaphors that work really well. you know, and things that tie in through your practical outward extensions make things more intelligible for people. And probably the biggest goal of those people who are working hard to make intelligible the environment, to bring society as a culture maybe through this, or the world as a people, through this vanishing point, we're all trying to...
All 5 billion
of us, or maybe just 144,000. But that's another story. That we're trying to do this to create models. And so people have perceived inspiration or information about events or situations and tried to relate them in whatever terms they had accessible. So we have to create these new models or find novel uses of old models, you know, that will allow people to understand. And I mean, that's what Finnegan's Wake is. I mean, he's trying to express these things he perceives that are going to happen in the environment in the form of a book. You know, but it's all these other mediums that he's portraying. You know, parts of it are like the telegraph, and parts of it are like a telephone, and parts of it are like
television,
the TV, and parts of it are like the movies, and
parts of it are CD-ROM.
I guess, and I guess, you know, parts of it are going to be, you know,
virtual reality, interactive media.
Exactly. And so, there, you know, all that is contained in there. But at the same time, we have to use a model. We have to be able to now. We have to come up with models with which to explain Finnegan's Wake to the average person. You know. So he tried to use Humpty Dumpty. I mean, he's trying to use ones inside of there that were things in fairy tales that already existed, people had an idea of.
Right.
You know, folklore. To an extent.
Exactly.
But, like, now we have to find a way to tell people that the Ten Thunders have some kind of parallel to something else that they already understand in their practical everyday world. If you can do that, you know, then people will start to grasp the transcendental clarity, which is what's really lacking. I mean, it's not that there isn't information or that, you know, what to do isn't out there. It's like getting enough people to know about it to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, there's enough food to feed the world, but getting everybody to know that and to get the forces organized and set in motion is a lot different than whether Buckminster Fuller in 1965 wrote the plan out, and he does have a plan, but not enough people know about it or want to do it, see? So you have to find a way to make it people... find it within their own, like, everyday or practical life
rather than
to experience
force it.
That's where, like, I agree with Bob in a lot of ways about people who are looking for some experience or some drug or some whatever to change them, and that's going to bring them to this big understanding, are going to fall short, because my understanding says that like, ultimate moment of cosmic consciousness is going to come in your most ordinary everyday state. You know, which for me, personally, is probably sitting in a chair with my eyes open. You know, if for somebody else, it might be sitting cross-legged on the top of a mountain with their eyes closed.
Right.
You know, if they do that every day. You know, but I'm saying for me, that's how it's going to happen. So, you know, I don't think that I'm going to be going off and shooting heroin every day. So it's probably my ultimate realization of the universe is not going to come, you know... You know, like I said, I don't know how to express that any other way.
Oh, I understand.
I think that's
what
Bob is saying, that you can't hold on to that transcendental kind of cosmic consciousness, you know, when you're dependent on some external substance that has to be injected or whatever to keep putting you up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
You got, and that's what I'm saying, why the vanishing point, you get there, you go through and you're there, and that's it, you know. There's no reason to ever not understand everything again. That doesn't mean that you... You know, as you might see through other priority hierarchical scales, that understanding is maybe not as high as wisdom, which is maybe not as high as understanding the will of all things. That doesn't mean that you can control everything just because you understand it, you know. Or you don't maybe able to predict what's going to happen next. Maybe, like I said, maybe one level is being able to understand everything that you're able to, that you receive. But there's another thing to be able to, like, having the wisdom to be able to tell what's going to happen next from the subtler forces in your environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not only that's beyond understanding them. You know, that's like beginning. That's like saying, you know, I understand how my media affects me, but, like, instead of that, it's like knowing that a year from now that some other act is going to come along that the people are going to dig, you know, or that another Picasso is going to be born. You know, And people have had that type of thing. Those are the people who are like Nostradamus or whatever who say, oh, and then the next savior will be born, or the Antichrist will be born, or the fortuitous event will happen around this and that, which, like I said, largely is due to astronomical things, you know, like the moon is opposed to the sun, and we have an eclipse, or Venus and Mars will be opposite Jupiter, and such, you know. And unfortunately, those guys who were back a long time didn't have the tools that we have today. They didn't have the idea that there would ever be a telegraph, let alone that there would be all these other forms of electric media, which, you know, only the, like, wise, like I said, the radio or the telephone or all these are all parallel of the ideas of telepathy that the wise men have had for thousands of years. You know, which is that they've known this, that concept that we talk about today as a cool new thing of your words are going out across the universe. Well, they knew that thousands of years ago.
We just found
and that's why they had vows of silence, because they knew there was so much power in words that if you kept quiet, then every word gained more power. You know, so it's great that Bob didn't come out, you know, in public until when he did. You know, yeah. It's great that we only get so much Bob at a time.
Yeah,
that's important. You know, I think it'd be nice to see more structure. You know, at least something that's part 1, 2, 3, and 4, like Furry Lynn, it's at least there's a...
Four parts.
There's four parts, and at least there's some kind of structure in there. I'm sure there is.
At least.
You know, just in the fact that there are four parts, there's some kind of structure.
Yeah.
But it's been divided.
So, back, how do you define electric tactility, then, in two sentences or less?
Well, I think electric tactility is then... Well, if you want me to define it in terms of... Well, let's just say electric tactility is then the overall nonstop stimulation of the body by non-visible or non-ordinarily visible.
Non-acoustic as well?
No, I think it's everything. I think it's the light that's hitting your body. It's the radio waves that are hitting your body. It's the sound waves that are hitting your body. It's the smells that are hitting your body. It's all those electric tactility. I mean, we don't have electrically generated smell machines. We will someday. We don't now. We have things that can create the feel of things, you know, but they aren't as sophisticated as the visual medium, the acoustic medium that we have, you know, electronically. But they will. The parallels will come out. So let's just say electric tactility is the, you know, all-encompassing stimulation of the human vehicle by its environment. You know, that's electric tactility. And that's also the idea that, you know, when I said all-encompassing, that's also trying to include the idea that, you know, your phone goes to every phone.
But how does that differ from me being hit by a rock or me being hit by an electric wire? Because the rock isn't...
Well, that's more power. I mean, you're going to get a shock.
But I'm saying in defining electric tactility. Me being hit by a rock has nothing to do with electric tactility.
Electric tactility is you touching the TV set and the TV set touching you. Or the person on the other end of the phone touching you with their voice and your voice touching them, as opposed to me coming over and being in the same room with you like I am now. I mean, we're experiencing electric tactility right now, but my conversation with you, I don't think you're receiving through electric tactility unless I was talking through a PA.
Exactly.
So, now, go on. He talks about small A, capital A art. I think that's another thing that needs to be said, like being a person, a small A artist, to have a perception of what's going on, which is what Bob defines it as. Essentially, he says...
Small A artists are perceiving, whereas large A artists are selling.
And he says small A artists' true perception of what is going on. So, obviously, Bob's putting that out as the definition. That's fine. But then, how is... Being a small A artist, is that part of the necessary... Are you a small A artist before you go through the vanishing point and you see the title of vanished or whatever? I mean, that's
a question.
Because he's saying at times that Frank did put some small A art out at times like that, but did Frank go through the vanishing point? I mean, maybe we need to ask Bob that question.
Did any of the 10 holy offices go through the vanishing point? Well, Mark, that felt real good.
We're back.
And now you are going to skip ahead and go to the front of the class and define what Bob is.
I'm going to skip ahead to page 14, and I'm going to transliterate, I guess. I'm going to modify Bob's verb tenses.
You're going to do what he does with McLuhan, Texas.
Right. And I'm going to try to come at essentially one sentence thing for what Bob is that maybe should be used in the future as press releases.
Almost like this is the glossary.
As opposed to getting caught up in the whole, to put an end to all the who Bob is, who he is not, and what or whom or where he is, we just say that Bob Dobbs is a satirical image satirizing mixed corporate media on the forum level. And that's it.
That's very good. Now, but let's.
And that's it. You don't have to say he's an artist. You don't have to say he's anything. And it leaves with the image that maybe Bob isn't just one person. That maybe Bob is a state of mind, which is more of what I get out of it, personally.
Very good.
And he leads from that section into the thing about his book. Now, what we were just saying, and Jerry wanted me to get down, was that in this process of becoming tuned into Bob, like I said, that Bob is maybe a thing that people can experience as a way of, after they've done a certain amount of work or tuning in or whatever we want to call it.
After they've decided
they get their graduate degrees,
yeah.
their final, the PhD in Bob's media ecology or in Bobism or in Bob rule.
Yeah.
There's usually stages to make something intelligible. When I say to you, go up the stairs to the door, you obviously have to know there's the bottom of the stairs, the middle of the stairs, and the top of the stairs to get to the door. It's just like to get a PhD, you have to get a high school degree, and then a BA, and then a master's, and then a PhD. And what are those stages within Bob's media ecology? From what I can perceive, maybe now it's to become
a member of Club 22.
Is that the first step? Maybe that's the first step.
I would say that's pretty much.
Become a member of Club 22, and then maybe to become a small A artist, and then maybe to go through the Vanishing Point.
Those are three possible.
Maybe there are more intermediate stages. That's part of why I wanted to talk about Club 22 on an extension of this dialogue.
Yeah.
But
well, I think it's like Jean-Luc Godard said. I like beginnings, middles, and ends, not necessarily in that order.
Yeah.
So you might be a member of Club 22. You might go through the Vanishing Point first.
Right.
I don't think there's an order.
Well, I've seen hierarchies of understanding, and I mean, you might be a master chef and a terrible musician, you know, and that just because you're a master at one thing doesn't mean you're, you know, a master of others. I mean, I might be a small A artist in one form, and I might only be a Club 22 enthusiast in another form. You know.
But I think that's what Club 22 is, a mixture of many types of awareness. So it's tactility, and it's auditory.
So then maybe Club 22 is not the bottommost grade. Maybe it's like the Masons, instead of replace the word Mason, replace it with Club 22, and replace the term Master Mason with Artist Past the Vanishing Point, replace Fellow Craft as Small A Artist, and then there's probably just like a, well, in the Masons, it's you have Apprenticed, Fellow Craft, and then Master.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the three levels. So I'm saying there must be a parallel on that kind of level. So maybe the whole thing, the Masonic thing, is the Club 22 tradition. I can see that within my own transcendental understanding, not really stemming out of Bob's thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no love for that apprentice Bob enthusiast or whatever you want to call it. You know, maybe there is, maybe there isn't.
It's a question of homework.
Right, but like I said, these stages of initiation or of understanding or whatever, not that any one of them is any better than other, but they just represent a more developed tactile sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's what that. A lot of what Bob is leading.
But let's go back to that definition.
Mm-hmm.
Bob is a satirical image satirizing mixed corporate media on the form level. How are you defining form there?
Well, the form level is that...
The human scale level?
Not only the human scale, but also the limitations. He discusses the limitations of different media. He discusses the actual, like, hardware in certain instances, as well as the software. He also talks about it in terms of, you know, just in terms of form, partly by participating in them. You know, I think that's the ultimate form of satirizing a forum is to, as he's saying, to use it as an anti-environment, you know, where you're satirizing it at the same time that you're using it. You know, maybe to put it in another term, you're being a truth injector as well as an anesthetic.
I think that's what a Manippean satirist is.
Exactly. No,
so Frank cuts down music by using music.
Right. So on that level, he's doing it. He's satirizing Ms. Corporate Media, but he's not being Bob because he's being an identity, and Bob is being an image. Bob is an image. Frank's not really an image. Frank Zappa was an identity that was like a car. You know, it was like naming a car. This car was named Frank Zappa.
Yeah, but he was a satirical image of
himself. Right, what I maybe lead to on the ultimate level was Bob was Frank Zappa, just Frank Zappa didn't know he was Bob.
Uh-huh.
You know, just as, I mean, I don't know how secret private these tapes are. I don't want to release secret names of masters, just to say that maybe R.D. is not, is Bob, but maybe he's the only one who knows it, you know.
But say that again. Say the whole thing again.
I'm saying maybe R.D. knows he's
no,
Bob.
No, you can say it. Cause
oh, I don't want to say it. Maybe, okay. You know, it's
R.D.
I don't send
is
my,
Bob.
He is Bob, but I'm Bob and you're Bob. When we tune into a level of understanding, we go through the vanishing point, we discover that we're all Bob. Bob's driving all the cars. You know, Bob Rule. I mean, I think that's a very effective term for it.
Lockdown Bob Rule.
Lockdown Bob Rule. Okay. Yeah. You know, I grasp all that, you know, and that's why I think it's more important to put out the specific thing in that definition of Bob Dobbs is a satirical image. He's an image.
Yeah.
He's not a vehicle. You know, just like a picture of a picture of a 65 Mustang in a Time magazine from the period is an image of a Mustang. It's not a Mustang. Bob Dobbs is an image. Bob Dobbs appearing in print or on the radio or as a picture or in somebody else's book or in my mind is an image. It's not just one person stuck to one vehicle. I don't know. Is that good or...
it's bad.
It's bad.
It's bad.
Some down,
don't steal the towels, Mark.
Don't let that one get out. No. You know, does that answer what I meant by on the forum level? That, you know.
Yes. You know, you've discussed what you think mixed corporate media is, so you've pretty much defined all the words there. That Bob is a satirical image, satirizing mixed corporate media on the form level. And, you know, finally establishing accessible definition of
Bob,
who and what Bob is.
Right. And to put it in a theosophical contest, we'd say that Bob is Christ consciousness. Bob is, you know, the one human soul. You know, there are all these human personalities and identities running around, but there's only one really human soul. There's this, like, one central ego seated in the hearts of all life. And that one, which people have recognized in their limited view, like I said, people can only interpret their inspiration within the technology or the models that they have to work with. And for them, they went, oh, that's Jesus Christ, or that's Christ. Christ meaning light, really, you know. And I would say that that's what it really is. Bob consciousness is light consciousness. Christ consciousness is light consciousness. LVX, the light, the lux, the
LVX.
Yes, that's the
Roman numerals.
It's a lot of things. That's when they talk about like light. There's a light that we see from the sun that we think of light, but everything is made of light. And that light is LVX. It's like the hidden light. It's a
building block of the universe.
Yeah, in a sense, but yeah, I'll go with that. The cosmic cookie dough, but
Tolls?
Actual LVX, no, no toll, just house.
Yeah,
but
it's
anyhow,
a house blend.
LVX is the Latin word for light, but within it contains a number of ideas because the letters are also numbers, so you could add LVX up to a number, which is 65, which has certain meanings, which adds 65 adds up to 11. We could talk about 11, or we could talk about 65 as being 65. Or we could just say that LVX is like three, has like three letters that are all made out of like, have 90-degree angles in them. or have angles in them. Or, you know, it's, you know, the ancient V was just a 90-degree L turned outside and axis, two of them. You know, so anyhow, to wrap it up, I just say that, you know, that Bob consciousness is light consciousness. And I think that to put out that short definition will lead people into realizing that and not become form limited in, into saying, oh, this corporeal entity is the only Bob. Or is Bob alone?
Hi, welcome back to Conceptual Continuity, Part 2, Bobbing for Apples. We're speaking with Mark Free, and we're analyzing the article Entertainment Sucks by Bob Dobbs. And Mark, could you define what Bob consciousness really is?
Well, as I'm saying, I think we need a term. I mean, I'll use Bobness for the sake of this discussion, although I think it's an poetically awkward term, and I would prefer a more succinct replacement. But let's just say that Bobness is that...
Slack, I thought you were...
Well, slack is... No, we were saying in the stages of unfoldment of Bobness within Club 22, that maybe we were saying we needed something for the first stage, and you had said it was Club 22, and I said maybe that was the name for the whole organization. I think maybe the first level is to be a slacker. You come in, and when you turn on, you become a slacker. And after a certain point of becoming a slacker and being a slacker in certain environments, you begin to gain a picture of perception of what's really at work within each environment that you're in. And then at that point, you become a small A artist in whatever medium it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you've become a small A artist to where you have pattern recognition within all of them, all the different media, then at some point, then you go through the vanishing point where you understand the entire electric environment. And then you experience Bobness. We didn't have really it. So it would be like the slacker, the small A artist, and then maybe the vanished or the Bob conscious individual.
Bob consciousness.
You know.
Okay.
The adept, you know, so to speak. The Bob adept. You know, I'm sure Bob would have some very humorous verb for us at this point.
And to proceed on, do you want to review the 10 holy offices at this point, Mark?
Yeah, I did want to talk about the 10 holy offices, mostly because I was first confused by the 10 holy offices and the
Secret Council
and the Secret Council of 10, mistakenly thinking that one was the other.
They were one and the same, and indeed they're
and
two different things.
Indeed they're not.
We'll leave Secret Council of 10 for another.
That is a yes
time, but
triple security tape.
At this point, we'll read from the liner notes of Bob's Media Ecology, and he has placed them in a particular order.
Yeah, and he lists them off. He says Marshall McLuhan, Herbert W. Armstrong, Lyndon LaRouche, Frank Zappa, Dr. Peter Beer, Mae Brussel, Finnegan's Wake, Cosmic Awareness, Garrett Dean, and Club 22. Now, we know Cosmic Awareness is the channeling entity of, I can't remember his name. I don't want to say it right.
Dave Wooster.
I was going to say Bernard. For some reason. Maybe that was his other closet consciousness. but anyhow, David Wooster and Garrett Dean and then Club 22, well, all those are definitely recognizable historical features, people, if you were to do your homework and look into their different work. And then he sits down there to try to give tetrad organization to their interplay.
Right.
And then there were these little three-letter, I guess they're abbreviations above each of those tetrad analyses for each office.
No, the three-letter coding is for what the tetrad is on. So the first one is a tetrad on rhetoric. So what does rhetoric do? It enhances.
But number one is Marshall McLuhan. Say.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Is that tetrad
Marshall McLuhan represents the holy office of rhetoric.
He's the chairman of the holy office
of rhetoric. Yes, okay, that's what it is. So the number corresponds with
So if it's a thing about rhetoric, maybe now if we were constructing this for ourselves, that we'd have to put Bob in that position because, or we'd put RD in that position to replace Marshall McLuhan because Marshall's vacated his vehicle and he's no longer the chairman of the office. Someone else has been put in there. Maybe that's Nelson Paul.
No, a holy office can still be valid and be dead. I'm not understanding you.
Well, I disagree. See, I think that
part, validity is.
I think that these are the people who have held the office or who have defined the office for the person
and
who
the
was,
founding father of the
yeah,
office.
Exactly.
And then it can only,
or at least the most recognized past president. I mean, of all these people that are on here, how many people are awake, are still alive? Lyndon LaRouche, still alive.
Yes.
Herbert Armstrong?
No, all of them are dead except
for Lyndon.
Cosmic Awareness and Lyndon LaRouche.
Well, and Club 22.
Club 22.
Hopefully.
Yeah, we lost two holy offices at the end of 93.
Who did we
completely
lose? Frank?
Frank and Garrett Dean.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
See, I'm tuned out, Bob. I'm sorry.
It's just the opposite, Mark. You're tuned in. It's just you weren't informed of that yet,
yeah,
or
okay.
You didn't learn of that. But I think you're striving for Bobness here. You've bypassed slacker stage, dude. Carry on.
Anyhow, so I'm just trying to make sense out of all these historical figures, and I understand that they were critical in influencing our founder here to attain his own awareness in terms of each of those subjects, and I think maybe if you would reiterate onto tape those subjects.
Oh, who
put
each
them out
one
and
is?
Just read the name of the abstract titles of the offices.
Even though we may
think we know exactly what they are, maybe Bob will correct us at some point, you know. Like, the first one you said is rhetoric.
Rhetoric is Mark.
Maybe it's rhesus monkeys, you know.
Right.
It is a
rhesus monkeys too. It's a rhesus peanut butter cup too.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'd like to get, you know.
No, I'm totally serious now. Rhetoric is the represented by the holy office of Marshall McLuhan. In grammar.
I understand who represented him. Just read him. Just grammar. Rhetoric, grammar.
Oh, just read the topics. Rhetoric, grammar, logic, music, astrology, arithmetic, geology, occult, personal, in Club 22.
See, I don't know whether. I think number five is astronomy.
What did I say?
You said astrology, which was more exciting, actually. But
astronomy. It could very well be astronomy. I'm sorry.
See, that's what I'm saying. Bob, you know, there's no real key that anybody without knowing Jerry, who had talked to Bob, could ever possibly figure that out. I mean, they could guess. They could make kind of weird things. They probably figure out music with Frank Zappa or whatever. But
of all the people I've sent these liner notes to, which is probably close to 100,
mm-hmm.
One person besides yourself have ever tried to tell me or ask me about those abbreviations.
Well, that says to me how hard they looked at it.
Oh, well, that says that, but it's also, it's very hard to get any sense out of this whole thing.
You know,
but
many are called, but only few answer.
That's it, Mark. I'm duly impressed, but I'm just telling you, it is in proof that I'm possibly mistaking the identification of one that I haven't thoroughly learned.
Exactly, and I'd say number 10, I mean, it is Club 22, but
it could be.
But yeah, it could be something else.
It could be Clue.
It could be Cluster. I mean,
Cluster, yeah.
I mean, and personal could be things too. Could be perspective. Could be.
Well, it is all those too, but I mean, when it comes down to just the
but I'm saying if we had a clear cut thing, just like as though I said, you know, two is wisdom and three is understand. I mean, there has to, I was saying, I want to get a.
For the purpose of a glossary index, those should
now,
be spelled
another
out.
Another thing is, are these numbers in a hierarchical, are these offices in a hierarchical number? Is the office of rhetoric more important than the office of grammar?
No, I would say no way.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah.
So then what is the, were the just arbitrary numbering? Or was it?
That's a very
now, I definitely think
question.
Club 22 is number 10.
Yes. Oh, I think so too.
But
that's
I think R one is one.
Are the other?
But does each number in 1 through 9 contain each other? I mean, this is kind of a numerological question, and for me, personally, I would say that the number 1 contains all the numbers, and everything else from there, 2 and through 9 are all interchangeable essentially.
Oh, and only number one contains all the rest, besides ten.
Ten is one. That's.
Oh, I see. No, but I would say Finnegan's Wake contains them all.
So you would put that one number one?
No, I would say that I would leave the order. I'm just saying if you're talking about that.
Oh, no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the sense of, like, if I was, like, to structure, like, the U.S. government in terms of offices, you know, there'd have different branches, like.
Numerically in order of power.
Now, I'm not talking about, like, the different branches, like, because, like, we know that the Congress and the president and the Supreme Court or whatever is supposed to be all equal on this kind of level as the three branches of government. Not one is running all of them.
Uh-huh.
But inside the office of the president, there's the president, then there's the vice president, and then there's his cabinet.
A hierarchy.
Okay. Right. And I'm saying that, like, seems like there should be one. If this is the executive branch of Bob Rule, okay, mm-hmm. these offices.
Right.
These are like the secretaries in his cabinet.
Yeah.
And each of them has their own office and their own people and all that stuff. But they all come underneath the president or whatever. And so it seems to me that, like, one of those little clusters, 1 through 9, one of those is the supreme one of all of them. Now, I don't think rhetoric is personally the top one.
Well,
you know,
the supreme one, I would say, is Club 22 because it merges all of them.
Well, I would actually vote for is number 8 or is number 9 or is number 7. See,
I would say 10 is what you're asking for, and 7's the closest one to illustrating it as an individual, because it's already known Club 22 is all of them. So how can you even include that in
your question? Well, like I said, that's outside of them. I'm just talking of 1 through 9. I'm saying maybe a better order.
1 through
order.
9.
I'm saying a more, let's just wait. This order is good. But and followable, but it's not truly on the deepest level significant.
Okay, and you would define.
I would like to see a significant order put out.
It might be acquired randomly. It might have been significant. That's the question, right?
Yeah. I don't. You know. I don't know how to. You know. That's only.
No, that's a question for Bob. Is the order significant or random?
And if it is significant, please explain how it's significant.
Right.
I mean, obviously, Marshall McLuhan is the largest, you know, of those two. Like, look at all those people. Maybe he'd say that the biggest small A artist of all of those guys was Marshall McLuhan. But
right.
Maybe he wasn't. Maybe James Joyce was.
Here's a flip of the page will get you to this point. Frank Zappa kineticizes visual and acoustic effects. Lyndon LaRouche acousticizes visual and kinetic effects. But Marshall McLuhan tactilizes visual, acoustic, and kinetic effects.
And all of them negated completely flip into Mabe Russell. That's on the other side.
That is the tetrad on May. Exactly.
No, that's the tetrad on Marshall McLuhan.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Good observation.
I already had looked at that. And tried to that night, and I was kind of shocked that he didn't say how Mabe Russell fit into that in a direct tetrad. He deciphered 3/4 of the tetrad, put them into like fluent model form, and then didn't left out the fourth feature. Like, we could take the same thing and why don't you read it again, and then when you come to the place where you're supposed to insert the name of number one, just say number one, and I'll say one, and then you. Then you read the next part of the phrase, and I'll say number two, and then I'll read them in.
Okay. Blank kineticizes visual and acoustic effects.
Okay. Frank Zappa.
Blank acousticizes visual and kinetic effects.
Finnegan's Wake.
But blank tactilizes visual, acoustic, and kinetic effects.
Mabe Russell. And that doesn't really work as in the specific, but I think that's showing like the
interchangeability.
Let's go back here.
What is it showing? Define the word.
Let's express this statement. Where is it on the page? As a mathematical equation, and then we'll be able to do it.
Where is it on side page 2?
Yeah. Halfway down. Okay, here he is. Okay, for example, person A.
Right.
A's. B and C.
Kinetic.
Person 2 sees BNA, but person C, or actually, I gotta go back there. Take that back again. Yeah, well, I think that we could just say person 2 A's B and C. Person 3 C's B and A. Person 1 D's A, B, and C. With A being, in this case, visual. A being acousticized. I'm blowing it again. Just leave it at that's the logic statement. Bob understands. But Bob, please.
No, you would say A kinetizes,
B
acousticizes, and C.
No, A kinetizes.
Right.
B is visualizes.
Right.
And C is acoustic. So person two kinetizes visual and acoustic. That's Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lennon LaRouche, he sees. C is acoustic. He acousticizes visual and kinetic.
Uh-huh.
He V's B and A, because A was kinetic. And and then McLuhan, D, he tactilizes, which is D, which is any of those three.
All right.
He D's A, B, and C, acoustic, kinetic, and visual effects.
Hmm.
All right. But what does Mae Brussel do? Obviously, she does something with D, you know, or maybe she doesn't have any D. That's what I'm saying. What's the...
Because you don't know enough about May, or what do you? What?
Well, I personally don't know enough about May, but I'm saying I don't see I can't guess mathematically what the next combination is going to be.
What the pattern is.
Right. Exactly. So I'm trying to say there must be a logic pattern behind the relationship of all these people that will work. You know, and I was thinking instead of using A, B, and C, where he's used terms that are new terms, not that visual, acoustic, or kinetic are new terms, but they're not contained within. If he has used rhetoric, grammar, logic, music, astronomy, as opposed to them, to say that Frank Zappa, he personalizes music and rhetoric, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then we could go on down to the next one of his to say that Finnegan's Wake visualizes acoustic and rhetoric. You know, I'm saying you be able to develop a input, just put the words in there and be able to get to develop paragraph structures, you know, mm-hmm. almost like Bob Mad Libs of sort, but with a little more organization.
What's a Mad Lib?
Where you have a insert, fill the blank, you know. You know, so they would create a general formula for reading out these tetrads and their relationship with the offices. You know, maybe he wants to replace one of them with kinetic effects. One of them is acoustic effects. I don't know. The only other thing I can see on this page that I want to talk about before we go back to Entertainment Sucks is the term Baroque spiral.
Please tell me about
it. I do not know. All I can get is it says that struggles between these archetypal retrievals as they fought for the status of most favorite anti-television anesthetic. This would require a rapid series of innovation within each archetypal form, and this is what he means by a Baroque spiral.
Well, it is instead of what we were talking about earlier, cyclical,
mm-hmm.
that it goes cyclically upward.
Yeah, but why is that? Why is it a Baroque spiral? Is it just a spiral? I mean, why Baroque?
Why the word Baroque?
Yeah, I mean...
That's a complete...
I mean, I associate the Baroque as being like a musical term. Talking about... I'm sure it's in a dictionary if we had one handy. But...
Oh, you mean what the word means?
Yeah, but I mean, in the strictest sense, you know, why does Bob choose to use... I mean, I understand now why he chooses to use Menippean. Okay? Because he's going back to our Greek roots. He could have used any other more modern names for that type of satire, but he wants to draw us back to the root of the situation. Why does he use Baroque spiral or instead of just spiral? Or what's the spin he wants to leave us with on that? And I guess you're going to give us the...
Well, Baroque, distinguished by elaborate ornamentation, strong rhythm, polyphonic, and figured bass. Exaggerated, showy, or ornate.
Exaggerated, showy, or ornate.
Irregular in shape.
Sorry, Bobby. Still not quite there.
Elaborate ornamentation, because as it's going around.
Now, I understand that this document we're actually looking at here is a secret council of 10 inner memo.
And it's hard to decipher.
And I mean.
And it's all just.
The Baroque Spiral must be the name of a project which the secret council of 10 is either undertaking or it is the process. I mean, I think we need a little more.
Well, we made a film about it, Hot Media Baroque Spiral.
What?
We made a film about Baroque Spiral. It's called Hot Media Baroque Spiral.
I think that information needs to be disseminated.
Immediately show me the film. Thank you.
No, anyhow, this memo, we'll have to analyze it at some other time. It's very dense and very filled with very, you know, lots of terms and information. And certainly we could sit there and just look at the timeline part of it. And
exactly.
And we're already in Holeopathic Retrieval's Lockdown, Bob Rule, Mythic Government War.
And it's all
psychosomatic. Goddamn, where do we go from there?
And it's all not psychosomatic.
You know, what happens in 2020, you know? I mean, Bob really hasn't... He doesn't say it goes on till eternity, you know? Lockdown, Bob Rule. I mean, it's like Lockdown, Bob Rule, only a 20-year sentence or a 30-year sentence? I mean... I don't know.
You want to know what happens after?
Well, I mean, I have my own.
Well, the questions are piling up.
I have my own prognostications of what the events will unfold and significant dates or whatever. I mean, I could tell you that July and August of 1999 will be very fun. May 5th, 2000 will be very fun, and there'll be a nice time in 2012. And you know, I could tell you about all those things. But I mean, Arthur C. Clarke and so a lot of other people have, you know, put a lot of stuff out, and I think there needs to be a little more delineation of these various time periods, not only as they relate to
each technology
as he's given the numbers that of which, you know, were the content, obsession, and interval position. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but to discuss the how those relate to the Ten Thunders, to just relate maybe how those relate to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think if when he was discussing Finnegan's Wake,
mm-hmm.
You know, if that had part of that timeline had been included in there, because it was really difficult when I was listening to that. One time he's using the Ten Thunders is merely explaining our progression from the telegraph to where we are.
Uh-huh.
But it's also representing how, like, of those 10 stages, that this whole thing of the telegraph to the end of that, to where we're at now, or where we're going in 2020, was only the 10th stage, and, you know, of the whole larger evolution that had been going on since the dawn of time or whatever.
Uh-huh.
That this was, like, that each cycle contained the same pattern on a larger scale, on a 10 times amplified scale, or a 10 times micro-sized scale. Uh-huh. Does that make sense to you? Just like saying that that not only does the pattern that's what we're supposed to learn to recognize through the 10 thunders going through the 19th century to present,
mm-hmm.
cycle. It also represents the cycle that's been going on since the dawn of consciousness or whatever. The whole...
And it represents till the end of time?
Yeah. Or, yeah, exactly.
Well, there is no end of time. Is there an end of time?
Is there time at all?
What time is it?
I don't have time to tell a tape. I mean, we're just layering.
No, I'm serious. In your mark... S-U-S-I-R-I-U-S.
Sirius? That's a pretty interesting planet. I could talk a long time about that.
But reiterate your point, because I'm getting it now.
My point is that this timeline and that, like, when I listened to it, I got a lot of information out of it. It was one of the first things that I heard with Bob.
Right.
And that, you know, using Finnegan's Wake as a self-discovery tool and learning how it applies not only to our personal interior makeup and mm-hmm. our own personal interior touching with the electric environment. At the same time, it also represents a pattern recognition system for the external environment and the courses of history and people,
mm-hmm.
as not only shown in the progression of the electric environment from its invention through its present-day state, but also in the expansion of consciousness following the same cycles, just like this electric environment not only brings back the environment that existed just at the beginning of when the telegraph came in, but it also takes us all the way back to the pre-verbal environment, pre-acoustic space, where we're living in the, of course, not pre-acoustic, in the pre-visual space, in the acoustic space, but at a higher speed. It's like a reiteration, like going back. Like the electric space is like the acoustic space, but it's at a higher speed. Like the speed of sound is slower than the speed of light. And the visual, you know, it's like a flipping stages of like the first five thunders and the second five thunders. During the first five thunders, you know, we're dominated by acoustic effects or whatever, and get out of the tribal man, and then a certain point in the story, that's where we start talking about the other part of the story, where we're talking about HCE, switches over to the story about his wife and the two sons or whatever. And so those next five thunders or whatever deal with the switch from the visual into the, you know, the expansion of the visual environment, the first, like, six, seven, and eight or whatever, and then 9 and 10 go back to the transition to the electric environment, which is also the transition back to the acoustic environment, so it's like the loop. You know, and not only is this like progression of time from 1840 till 2020 intelligible within this pattern recognition of Finnegan's Wake, but it's also can be shown out as gone over the periods of time going back thousands and thousands of years, the same a growth pattern at work underneath it. If that makes
sense. Is it again a type of pattern recognition, comprehensive awareness.
Exactly. I think that's what really is going on, because even if everybody becomes Bob conscious, everybody tunes in, everybody's able to effectively rework the media situation. Like, let's imagine that we could solve all what people consider the world's problems, feeding everybody, giving somebody a place to sleep or, you know, something to do or whatever it is. After you solve all that, there's still going to come a point where there's going to be too many people on the planet. There's still going to come a point where the planet's, even if we solve all that and don't have wars and control our population reproduction systems, there's going to come a point when the planet's going to cool down, even if it's thousands and thousands of years from now. Even if we can make life happy and peaceful and work it out, there's going to come a point where we either have to go off the planet, or we have to fix the planet, or we have to do something. And we'll have to take this cycle of growth to the next level. You know, it seems hard for people to imagine that these problems that we have now are solvable. But like I said before, people have already proposed solutions. It's a matter of getting them in. Like Bob says, he's already in control. It's a matter of getting people to recognize and bow down, not in a bad way, to his system.
Right.
But just so that we get on with the work.
Right.
You know, and make it, like, happen a lot quicker. Right. I can dig that. But I'm saying there's a point, even when we do all that work, to a point all which necessarily hasn't been laid out at this point. Right. I'm trying to help get it laid out.
Right.
There's going to come a point where even if we achieve that kind of global harmony interaction, where there's still going to become a next level, whether it's breaching out into space on a pink program type of thing, as Bob would say, putting yourself in a rocket and risking your ass, getting blown up, you know, risking all that, like a beautiful receiver of cosmic consciousness by putting in a rocket with a bunch of explosives on it, doesn't sound like a great deal.
Yeah.
Sounds more, personally to me, more valid to imagine going to other planets by ripping a hole in the space-time continuum with one's consciousness and going, like, through, like going from here to the moon without having to, like, transverse, actually travel in a line from here to there, just being able to rip a hole in consciousness and go there.
With your physical body?
Yeah. Or with your awareness. Anyway.
Just with your awareness or
either way.
Either both.
Either or both or neither, even.
Yeah.
But I'm saying traveling that way, I mean, and but I think it involves a corporeal shift in the sense, because that's the only way with which to send someone, like, on a safe pink program. If you wanted to send somebody to Alpha Centauri, letting the cat out of the bag, and you could develop human beings so that they had a long enough lifespan, which is what we're evolving towards. We're getting longer and longer lifespans for the purpose of being able to stay alive on this long trip that it's going to take to go from here to Alpha Centauri to go to the new solar system, because you can't die in space, and you can't conceive in space. Let's just put it that way. Not that you can't die out there. You could die. But your soul, when you die here, goes up into the atmosphere, gets broken up, and ends up in another living creature. So if you die out in the vacuum of space, that energy just goes who knows where. And by the same thing, when you conceive a child, you have to bring that soul down and put it into the spark. You know, you're making the vehicle. At some point, you can put the driver in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're following me.
Oh, I get it.
But so, if we're going to go to these foreign places and I'm saying, say imagine we can get over the dangers of getting out into space or all the like the actual physical dangers to where that's not a factor. Having to stay alive on a really long fucking ride to Alpha Centauri.
Yeah.
Is a long thing, and you probably have to be able to live a couple hundred years. And that's what we're evolving towards now, where people are living 100 years. People are going to live 120 years. And in 1,000 years from now, if everything goes right, people will be able to live 200 years, and then people will be able to make that trip. But still, even if we do get to the point where people will have the physical organism to make the trip, we're going to have some way of scouting the area. Not only that, we're going to have something like out there, like a beacon, or something that these people can shoot towards.
Uh-huh.
You know, and the way that'll happen is through this probing, whether if we could learn to see that around Alpha Centauri, if there's a solar system, if which planet there is to that, like a sense of scanning. So, like, the whole idea of, like, long-range and short-range scans, you know, is an analog or a model, a metaphor for a thing that the human mind could probably do, but we'll probably have to develop, you know, radar scanning of those places to find the right planet first.
Uh-huh.
You know, but it'll be a parallel of somebody reaching out there with their mind or with their consciousness.
Uh-huh.
And then we could physically send the organisms out there, the people, to populate the place. You know, right now it's very interesting. Are we going to experience this presence of other higher, you know, life forms? And it seems to be like Bob is kind of hinting at discussing the whole alien / conspiracy class / visitation. Now, I don't know, I don't officially have a take on it. Maybe you can tell me whether Bob thinks there are space aliens that are going to come to the planet, or whether he thinks that's a government hoax, or what does he...
He thinks there's been 4 encounters that are actually legit.
So he thinks there are higher life forms.
Yeah, I think, you know, higher might be the word to dispute, but other alien or,
okay,
you know, other world.
Extraterrestrial.
Exactly. I believe he would say yes to that, but then again, I don't like to put words in his mouth.
Yeah, I don't
either. We'll let him, but that's what he's talked about in the past.
Okay, let's just say that there's becoming physical evidence and information disseminating within our society, specifically the monuments of Mars and the crop circles.
Right.
On this planet that are hinting to the presence and the realization of the presence of certain intelligent entities that are, I'm not going to say they're in control, but they're monitoring, or they're certainly present or omnipresent within our situation.
I think the crop circles are evidence of that.
Yeah. And even, like I said, even if the crop circles are a hoax and some man made them, that he would conceive of them, their shape, and be able to pull off the hoax himself would show that he's of a higher form of intelligence than the greatest scientists on this planet who can't figure it out. So whether or not it's extraterrestrial intelligence or it's terrestrial intelligence, to me, is irrelevant. Just as the presence that there are people with higher inspired knowledge on the planet who are putting information out there. The idea that the monuments exist on Mars and that people have checked them out and found certain pattern recognitions inside them that suggest certain mathematical truths that they've learned through empirical, you know, investigation of the universe,
mm-hmm.
is to me also stimulating the idea that
mm-hmm.
that there are higher or extra human
right
and intelligence
intelligence
and you know, when we deal with solving all the world's problems, I think if we get everybody to participate in the media fast and to tune in to a certain basic level of slack, achieve a certain zeitgeist worldview of slack,
mm-hmm.
to where we can start diversing slack to everyone, slack in terms of food and sleep and the basic human necessities, you know, solve those problems,
mm-hmm.
those seemingly insurmountable problems. Then we get to the next issue, how do we deal with these higher intelligences? How do we respond to them? Are we xenophobic? Do we respond with fear and with anger? Do we try to kill them? Do we suck them in and put them in control and hero worship them? Do we, do you see what I'm saying? There's kind of like how we're going to respond to the presence of these higher, it becomes the next question. After, can we turn on to what is realistically the environment around us and what people need and the disbursement of the abundance? Like I said, that's really on one level kind of trivial. It's kind of material, although it's important and it's practical. And I think that is the actual, I'm perceiving as the first gist of Bob's media fast and ecology message. The second level is learning to develop some kind of proper response to the presence of these higher I keep wanting to say higher, but...
Well, we understand. Just say ETs.
Yeah, these entities.
Yeah.
And And, you know, there's all kinds of theories out there.
Because we've also ran through them in the watching Hollywood movies from the day the Earth stood still, the invaders from Mars,
exactly,
where they're bad guys and the army has to deal with shooting these.
Well, and that's propaganda form, you know. We've got, but then at the same time, you've got Close Encounters and you've got
E.T.
You know, and in Close Encounters, we're basically pushed into the hero worship thing. These guys have got it all together, and they've been in control, and we can't even understand them, and they come and go as they please, and whatever. I mean, that I don't know what is really promoting the right response. You know, to me, I think a higher response is to realize that it is to through the Bob model. Bob is really in charge of the solar government and the universal government, that type of consciousness, not some specific vehicle that is experiencing that thing, then we can learn that we have a bond to these extra terrestrial entities through that intelligence. So,
I think that was proved by one of the callers we had after two or three shows ago, where a woman told me her psychic experience in very detailed and said she rarely told this story to anyone. There was a traumatic situation in her life. And then I said, well, why do you feel that you can tell me about it right now? I mean, I was trying to converse with her, but I could not quite understand until she says, well, Bob believes in ETs. Not quite that simplistic, but that's what she was saying, that through that...
Right, he's creating a forum.
A forum. She formed a trust in talking about something.
Right, being able to open up.
She felt enough slack. That's it.
She felt enough slack to be able to speak her mind.
Yeah.
She wasn't worried about losing her slack if she spoke up.
Exactly. Now, maybe we could touch on time for a second, Mark, because you went into it and then diverted so sophisticatedly, yet so insightfully. No, it was very good. Interview that you've read, Bob and Frank, he talks about his concept of all times happening now. So,
well, I'm familiar with that concept, not through that interview. I've only really worked extensively on the beginning of that, where he's talking about Frank with music.
But how are you familiar with that concept? And is it valid in our philosophical discussion?
Well, now, for me, that concept is an eternal concept, and it's not something... I get the idea from Bob that it's only after 1945 or whatever that this has been so. It seems to be like the time stopped on 1945 and everything's been layered on top since then. That's the image he's presenting.
Yeah.
And I'm not disagreeing with that.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I'm agreeing with it being 1945, because I personally think that, like, right now is on one level of understanding... All the time that ever was or will be is like right now. It's like all the future episodes, all the past episodes, and all the other episodes that are going on simultaneous in other places are all now. So like when I ate breakfast this morning, or whether I didn't, is happening now at the same time as me doing this.
Right.
Or it's happening at the same time as me going to sleep tonight.
Right.
Because it'll all be now when it happens. And it's all big, like one big extended long now.
And then you have.
But I'm saying that a woman who lived in prehistoric times and a poet who lives 500 years from now, we're all living at the same time. You know, but you know, I think this is a really tough question. This is where you start talking about dimension, because it's a matter of consensus. You know, one person's experience of a minute can be shorter than others are long. I mean, when you listen to someone talk and you dig it. A minute flies by like you didn't even notice, but when they're talking and you don't dig it, man, a minute is forever. And you're just, you know, and it's all what you're putting on it. It's subjective,
right.
You know.
Right.
It's your own solipsistic interpretation of the moment.
Do you want to go into that word now?
No, I want to leave that. But I just was apropos to that statement, and to say that the perception of time, you know, being relative, and I would say, like, then we talk about like third, you know, dimension, and the fourth dimension, and the fifth dimension.
Mm-hmm.
You know, an object that's like the ultimate three-dimensional object, like the pyramids or or a mountain or something, looks a certain way and has a certain existence, consciousness, and it's three-dimensional in the third dimension. It has a certain height, a certain weight, width, you know, a certain color, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
But now those things change over a certain time. And that time being generally as the fourth dimension, or duration, or extension, I would call the fourth. Like, so like overextension, the mountain gets smaller or gets taller, or the sea gets larger, you know, forms change, or man grows up and, you know, what's the saying? He walks on 4 feet in the morning and 2 feet at noon and 3 feet at dusk. I don't know if you know that one.
I haven't heard that one.
You know, talking about being a baby and crawling and then walking and then using a cane, you know. But they're all, you know, a relative pace, but all these times are happening now. And I don't know if I really explained to say that the fifth dimension then would be a personal, subjective, like, interpretation of the person whose minute was longer than the others is all their fifth dimensional experience. I would call the fifth dimension as personal, subjective, unconscious. Because you're not really conscious of the fact that it's, why it's longer or shorter. You just are aware of it. You know, like when we look at a color and I show you this and this is orange. Well, yeah, we both could say it's orange, but not really. I mean, if we were to look around the room and there's a lot of things that are red in the room. And I said, well, pick the thing in the room that's red to you, the most red, the most that's red. You know, not, and I looked around the room, we probably picked different things. And yet they both be red, or they both be like red.
A shade of red.
Yeah, so there's a certain consensus involved in saying something. So when we look at the grass, we say it's green, but really all we can truthfully say is that it's light green. Because your ultimate green and my ultimate green might not be the same wherever they are. But that's a personal, subjective thing. Okay, but then there's another level of understanding where I say 1 plus 1 is 2. And suddenly that, regardless of the title, it could be un is deux.
Right.
It doesn't have to be the language, but the concept of it is a higher level of consensus than it is between us both saying it's like green. Like we on a deeper level know that. So that's like a collective, objective, unconscious. So now we're in the sixth dimension.
Which is
the sixth dimension, the personal, objective, unconscious, like the ideal of races and numbers. When we talk about a color, you know, like something happens in time, like the tree grows up and it has an apple on it. At some point, the apple changes from green to red. When we watch the tree grow up, it happens in the fourth dimension. It grows up and it gets cut down and used for fire. That's all fourth dimension. In the fifth dimension, at some point in the fourth dimension, we take that fourth dimension and expand it out and say, the apples are red now. They're not green anymore. And I said, they're like red. Okay. Now, that's one set of consciousness where we could disagree or we could agree, depending on our perceptual state. But then there's another deeper level where we look at that and we say there's two red apples. Now we've, like, taken to a collective, objective, unconscious level, which is, like, deeper than the color of them. Or the shape of them, even. So then we take it to the next level. Well, what happens next, do you think? You know? Well, what happens from then is really hard to talk about, because you start getting into, like, personal experience of the whole changing matter of things. And so we're, like, experiencing all these higher dimensions. But at the same time, all we have to basically work with is these three-dimensional models and these terms and words. And it gets very difficult to see that, like, the time when that tree was a seed in the ground, the time when it bared fruit was all the same time, you know. And that knowledge comes out of my own experience and out of other people's liturgical models. A woman named Jane Roberts wrote a book called Oversoul 7, which I gave to Phil for his birthday.
Oversoul 7?
Yeah, Education of Oversoul 7.
Which
basically touches on that whole idea where this one oversoul is in charge of these seven or eight different people. And he checks in on them from time to time. You know, but he can only be with one of them at a time, like the angel. And all the times are going on at once. All their lives are all the same beginning and the same end. So in other words, when we go to time, we go to the now as a beginning, all the things at beginning, the seed going in the ground or you being born, all those nows are right here. When we're going to the beginning, now is the beginning. When we go into now as the continuation or now as the middle, then we're in touch with that moment when the tree's growing up, when you were 13 years old or whatever and growing. When James Joyce was 13 years old and growing. When the in James Joyce's whole lifetime, it's all parallel. Everybody has the same beginning. Whether that my beginning is 5 years, or a tree's beginning is a year, or a fly's beginning is one day, it's all the same beginning. All that now is happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. All the beginnings are here now, and all the sustainings are here now, and all the changings, all the endings are here now.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, in terms of the universal length of a life is so long, a 70-year life and a 7-minute life are all stretched off over the same measuring pattern. So I'm saying that from the perspective of the different dimensional looking, you can realize what's interplaying as far as, like, the real consciousness involved,
mm-hmm.
in terms of what level are you operating on. Anyhow, I guess we're...
Well, it's like Be Here Now.
Yeah.
Baba Ram Dass. We can take that and say Bob's propagating an awareness of all times happening now.
Right.
And we can think about that and talk about unity.
Yeah, but whether or not, see, so then for me, it didn't just end at 1945, it ended at time zero, and we've never left time zero.
And we never
left. Like, in other words, every moment in between, talking about the interval, like if our life is a film, in every moment in between the different flickering images of the film, in that little black space on the film, we go back to the moment before the Big Bang,
mm-hmm.
before the whole universe is created. Every time, like, the projection's flickering and the image is going dip, 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 but in between there's a little moment where we're all going back to the center of the universe.